Peter, did you enjoy the lesson yesterday?
Yeah, hi everyone, this is Peter. I really enjoyed learning what we talked about yesterday, great work, and what that is.
And great work is a book, of course, written by someone, and these are from the executive book summaries, and I think there's a lot of good things for us to think about in here. Amanda, don't you think so?
I think so. I think it's really good. The title of the book is How to Make a Difference People Love, and we're talking about not just about what kind of job you have, but what you do with your job. And
right.
That makes a difference.
That's very important. And our lesson is on pages 26 and 27. And yesterday we talked about some traumatic experiences that people have. And I remember that you mentioned that some people don't know that, but Amanda used to be a police officer in New Zealand. So she's seen a lot of traumatic experiences, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
And don't you think people have to keep calm at that time?
Very calm. Well, I think that's the job of police officers, is in an emergency to be the calming presence, to be able to make sense of what is going on and then know what to do.
Right. So keeping calm and, of course, helping someone who has a problem, being optimistic that there is an answer, that's important, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Being optimistic. You don't normally feel optimistic in a serious, traumatic situation. But if you are optimistic and if you are calm, you take leadership of that situation and really leads to something that can be a lot more a positive outcome and help people.
It's hard for you to be optimistic when you're in this situation, but someone else can help you through the trauma, because you are the one going through it, but their optimism will help pull you out of it more, don't you think?
Definitely.
So that's a good job, to make a difference, to help people who are having these problems.
Right.
It's only natural to have trauma when you're in an accident. You can't help it.
No.
But then you need people, instead of saying, oh, how terrible, I'm getting it worse and worse, say, calm down, it'll be okay. So you or yourself may be not be able to control it, but others can help you.
Right.
And you can be one of those others, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, our article here is going on to talk more about work and offices and corporations. So let's open our magazines today to page 27. That's where we're going to start. Now, what company are we going to talk about, Amanda?
We're talking about O.C. Tanner, and that is the company that David Sturt has.
Mm-hmm.
And they are an institute, which we saw at the end of yesterday. They're actually a consulting company.
Okay.
They specialize in employee recognition and reward systems.
Okay, so sometimes people hire people and they don't pay a lot of attention to them. You know, we have our HR, human resources departments, and they try to think of ways to do that. But it's always nice to think about different ways to help your employees and recognize what they do, and sometimes give them a reward if possible. But sometimes you do things and you don't even get a reward.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's nice to have people do things and not expect a reward, don't you?
Or in a way that you, like, it's not necessarily your bosses or managers that give you a reward. I mean, yesterday we saw a story, Moses the janitor, his reward was to see the hopefulness on the parents' faces or the child's face.
Right.
Realize, oh, there is hope in this situation.
Right. He might not get any kind of recognition from the hospital, but from the people that he helped,
right,
he certainly did, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. He makes a difference with parents and patients by being positive and calm in situations. And he engages with those people, and he gets the reward from seeing these people get better over time and really just changing situations. He gets to see the positive outcome.
That's true. So today, as we start on page 27, we're going to take the first paragraph in the left-hand column. So let's read it together.
O.C. Tanner launched an exhaustive Great Work study that included surveys to 200 senior executives. A further set of surveys to 1,000 managers and employees working on projects, an in-depth qualitative study of 1.7 million accounts of award-winning work in the form of nominations for awards from corporations around the world, and one-on-one interviews with 200 difference makers. The results of the study revealed that those who do great work refuse to be defeated by the constraints of their jobs and are especially able to reframe their jobs. They don't view their jobs as a list of tasks and responsibilities, but see their jobs as opportunities to make a difference. No matter, as Moses so ably exemplifies, what that job may be.
So we're finding out more about this Tanner Institute. It says O.C. Tanner. I'm sure it's named after someone with that name, don't you think?
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, they started a very, well, you could say exhaustive. Exhaustive doesn't mean to be tired. Exhausting is to be tired, but what does exhaustive actually mean? Complete and thorough?
Yes, so you're very good. Yes, complete and including everything.
Okay, and what did this study, what is it about?
Well, we see that they had surveys to 200 senior executives, so they sent it out to a lot of people.
Oh, a survey, huh?
Mm-hmm, a survey.
Yeah, and the survey asked questions that they wanted to find the answers to, and so they focused this exhaustive study on the leaders of companies, the managers of companies.
Right, not only the executives, but the managers, the project managers, the supervisors, people like that, and employees who were working on certain projects. And this was what they call an in-depth qualitative study. That sounds very thorough. When something is in-depth, it means very deep. They're going into all the details. They're not just asking a few questions. Are your employees happy? Yes. That's not in-depth.
Right.
An in-depth study would be, what do you do? How do you help them? What's the results? Oh, it goes on and on, doesn't it?
Right. And it's not just the facts of something that can be measured, but also the emotion, perhaps, behind it. Like, how did you feel when you did this? Or what did this experience? So it's also the experience and the situation surrounding the fact.
Well, what would be a qualitative study mean? I mean, a study is a study.
That's right. But a qualitative study is not just numbers, and it's not just facts. It's anything to do with kind of emotions or things you can't really say, well, is that a 1 or a 2 or a 3?
Was it well done? Was
right.
it high quality?
That's right, yeah.
Not only did you do it, but how did you do it, right?
Right.
That's very important, right? Well, this study did 1.7 million accounts of award-winning work. Now, you wonder how that's an awful lot of accounts. And where did they get this information from? What was their resource there?
Well, it says in the form of nominations for awards from corporations around the world. So they looked at the accounts that were being nominated for different awards in different sections. And they said, well, we want to learn more about that account. And so they approached them and gave them
a lot of people rate them. Well, you know, a lot of restaurant chains, they'll say the best waitress this month or the best something or other. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies have these kind of little things where they give awards, right?
Right.
And so they found out all these kind of awards that people give. Mm-hmm. And then they did an exhaustive study. It took a long time to do it. Could be exhausting too, I think.
Right.
As well as a deep study. But a lot of different corporations. And then they also did some, not just by paperwork around the world, they did one-on-one interviews.
Yeah, they did one-on-one interviews with 200 difference makers.
I wonder who the difference makers were. Like people that had companies like, you know, charity organizations. And
possibly, or maybe they've heard about people like Moses, the janitor that we met yesterday, perhaps through the managers that shared information.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided to go and interview those people one-on-one.
One-on-one means face-to-face, doesn't it? All right, they did that. Well, what were the results of the study?
Well, the results revealed that those who do great work refuse to be defeated by the constraints of their job. And they especially are able to reframe their jobs.
Okay, now that's very important. And I use my yellow marker pencil. I hope you have one if you have a magazine there. And underline that. Because the study showed that some people refuse to be defeated by things that we call constraints. And what is a constraint, actually?
It's something that limits the range of a person's actions or freedom.
Okay. There's a lot of things that we can't do, so you can't do this, you can't do that. But they said, I'm not going to let that defeat me. I'm going to do what I can do and not look at what I'm not supposed to do.
Right.
And so these constraints, because of their job, maybe the janitor, he can't, you know, do everything. So they can't do the same as a doctor.
Well, no one told him you can help parents and patients. You can
right.
talk to them and make
counselor,
mistakes.
Right.
No one told him to do that. They didn't hire him to do that job.
No.
Yeah, it's not his job description.
No, but their job, they reframed and they said, I'm going to help people anyway. And they look at their jobs in a different way. Instead of, this is my job to clean the floor, he really enlarged it. They reframed it. They made the job bigger.
Right. It says here, they don't view their jobs as a list of tasks or responsibilities, but as opportunities. And I think that's great. They're not constrained by the task or responsibility, but they look deliberately for opportunity.
Right, and I think that's very important. You know, you can even go to school and be a teacher and say, I taught everybody and they should learn it. But that's not enough. You know, to make a difference, a teacher has to find different ways of helping the people that need help in the class. But you could say the other teachers do their job, but that's not enough. Right.
Right. Technically, you are doing your job. You are completing
right.
that list of tasks and responsibilities. But are we looking for opportunities?
Yeah, life
to reframe your job, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Life is more than a test score. You don't
right.
fill in the bubbles and get your number at the end.
Well, and like Moses, you know, he very definitely exemplifies. He's a very good example. He became a counselor, a cheerleader. He didn't have to just clean the room, empty the waste baskets. He really talked to the people. So he reframed his job a little, didn't he?
He did. And it said he took the opportunity here to make a difference in the lives of the people he saw around him.
Well, that's right. In fact, we like stories. And there's one here that's in a sidebar. Let's read that while we're right here, Peter. Let's find another more inspirational story.
Sturt tells the story of school yearbook photographer Tina, who accepts the challenge of photographing autistic children, trying hard to create the best picture she can of children who often cannot focus on the camera or even stop themselves from drooling. One mother told Tina her picture was the first picture of her son in which he looked as she saw him. Great work is packed with inspirational stories of people in a wide range of jobs and circumstances. Readers will inevitably return to their jobs with a new attitude and a renewed hope to make a difference.
Okay, so if you want to get this book, this is a book review, you have more and more stories, and you will inevitably, or for sure, inevitably just means for sure, you'll be sure to go back to your job with a new attitude and say, hey, I'm going to do more. Mm. So that's pretty interesting there. Now, this was a picture of a person who had problems, physical problems, and tell us more about that one.
Well, we see that what Tina does is that she photographs autistic children. Now, autism is when a child or person is unable to develop the social skills used at a usual level. Perhaps they're quite quiet or they have difficulty communicating. And so what can often be difficult for the parents is to photograph them perhaps is the way that they see them. We see here the mother said, oh, this is the first time her son looked the way she saw him. So
she sees him perfect in a way because it's her son,
exactly.
I love you. And she saw the beautiful boy she loved, not the sickness, right?
Exactly. Yeah, she did not see the autism. She saw his character, his personality inside him. And so she loved the fact that the photographer was able to capture that.
So if you like to read stories like that, you might like something like that book. But the point of this article is to tell us that all of us need to be sure that what we do, we make a difference. And there are certain skills involved. And I notice here that in this book, they have listed 5 skills. Now, that's a lot of skills. I could cut it down to 3 myself. You know, I think 3 is good, if you could even do 3. But let's read the 5 and see what they say. Let's take the first 2 skills now on page 27, the second column.
The 5 skills. The study also pinpointed the 5 skills that all those who do great work seem to possess. And much of great work is spent exploring these skills. The first skill is to ask the right question. Cell phones are ubiquitous today, but they were invented because someone asked a question that had never been asked before. Why do we have to call a place instead of a person? The second skill is to see for yourself. One of the co-founders of Netflix resolved the core problem of the nascent company, how to avoid damage to DVDs as they are being mailed, by spending hours in a mail sorting facility and noticing the relative gentleness of the larger flat mail automatic sorter.
Now, what does this study actually do then, Peter?
Well, the study pinpoints five skills that all great work seems to have, to possess.
Okay, so all jobs, I guess. Well, to pinpoint something, that's a very interesting word.
Yeah, and that means to kind of hone in on it, to have some emphasis. And
to point it out.
Yeah.
To notice them.
Yeah, just look at these few things rather than everything at once.
There's a lot of different things, but I want you to notice these five things. I'm going to point out these five things. This is what the author said. And what do those five things indicate or tell us?
Well, that great work, well, first of all, we have the first skill is to ask the right question.
Right. So the first one, exploring these skills, is to ask the right question. Now, that just means to question things.
Mm.
You can have a lot of things to say about a new product or a new idea, and you can say, oh, I don't know if that's any good. But if you ask a question, why do we? You know, people that invented things were all because of some question. You know, like the sticky notes that we use. Somebody thought, why don't we have one that'll stick on the paper? And the question is, why? Why? So why and how? Those are good words to ask questions with, aren't they?
Very good.
Yes. And so that's why, so now it says cell phones are ubiquitous. Now, ubiquitous is a very big word, and we've taught it many times in advanced class. But I know a lot of people, when they look at it, oh, I don't know that word. Because even though it's a very common word, we don't really use it in our speech. Do you use it in your speech?
Not
never.
At all, no.
No.
I
but
only
do
really
read
see
it.
Yeah, written, in written form.
And what does it actually mean?
It's everywhere.
It's seen everywhere. Everywhere. It's ubiquitous. But I don't go around saying that's ubiquitous. I don't think you do it either, Peter.
No, I don't use it that much.
No, but we have to know what it means anyway. So cell phones are everywhere today. They're everywhere. But somebody probably asked this question. I don't know if they did or not. What was the question that they suggested they might have asked?
Well, the question was, why do we have to call a place instead of a person?
Okay. So do you think that somebody said that, why do we call a place? Why don't we just call the person? I'm not sure, but that's what they suggest. Do you think that's why they invented cell phones?
Well, if you're asking me, I think just technology led to that point.
Right.
But maybe a certain company did really well because they asked this question to make a cell phone more personal.
Right.
And made it more for the person. And that's why leading questions are important, because you really get to see how people think and go, well, why does it have to be this way? And that's what really changes companies for the better.
Right. And that can be in little things as well as big things.
Right. I think challenging the norm, what we would say the norm, what we normally do every day, and challenging that and asking, oh, what about this or why that, really does create things for the future.
That's
future
true.
Technology.
You know, the people who invent things, there's a lot of people who invent all kinds of little things we don't even know about. That's because they wonder, well, why do we do this or that?
But right.
You know, so, yeah.
And some things we end up thinking, oh, they don't really make our life more convenient. But other things do become very popular and they become ubiquitous.
That's true. Everybody uses them, that's for sure. So the first one is to know why we have to do certain things certain ways. Sometimes we have to, sometimes we can change it. But the question will help us develop a way to help people more, right?
Right.
What's the second one then?
Well, the second skill is to see for yourself and go and look and see for yourself how it is working. And we're given an example here that Netflix faced. It says one of the co-founders of Netflix, and for our listeners, Netflix, what is Netflix, Peter?
Yeah, well, in America, we have this company called Netflix, and you can rent movies by mail. Mm-hmm. And so movies come into the mail, and they mail DVDs to you. You can find movies on their online streaming too, but this second point is talking about a problem they had with mailing DVDs. Mm-hmm. The mail wasn't gentle with the DVDs, and this is their product, and they can't sell this product to customers if it breaks in the mail. And so the co-founder went to look and see how the mailing process actually worked for himself. And that's when he found out a solution to mail with larger flat mail automatic sorters. And that's
how to avoid damaging the DVDs
yeah.
with your mail. To me, that still sounds kind of old-fashioned because everybody just downloads now or watches them on their iPads or something, don't they?
Well, and I think that's why earlier it says the nascent company, because this was at, and nascent is an adjective meaning the earliest stages of development.
Right.
So this is early on.
They used to mail them more, didn't they?
Right.
That's right.
I don't think they do much now.
Well, and this company, Netflix, has been a leader in downloading movies online. So
right.
if they have someone like this co-founder who went and looked for himself, he probably found new solutions to being a leader in downloading content.
Mm. That's right. So they tried to find out a way to be sure that the person could get it without it being damaged, you know.
Right, and I think it's talking here that oftentimes, you know, when you're in a leadership position, you're hearing from other people what the problem is, but sometimes you really just need to go look yourself so that you can decide what you want to do.
Right, so he kept hearing they're damaged, so he went to the place where they're mailed and looked at it to see. So sometimes you have to just really put some action into it, not just do thinking, right?
Right.
So put a little action into it. Okay, well, let's read the last three.
The third skill is to talk to your outer circle, which means to go beyond the usual core group of people you speak with frequently. In today's digital age, the outer circle is almost infinite, as the success of crowdsourcing proves. The fourth skill is improving the mix, which means knowing what to add or subtract from your job, and also checking for fit, ensuring that the elements of the mix are in harmony. The final skill is delivering the difference, to continue working almost obsessively until people love the outcome.
So what is the third skill then?
The third skill is to talk to your outer circle.
Outer circle? What is an outer circle?
Well, that just means anyone that's not in the normal group of people you hang out with.
Other people that you don't usually do things with?
That's
maybe
right.
Not your same profession even, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're a doctor, don't just always go out with doctors, right?
That's right.
Or nurses.
Yeah. And I think the reason is that you get a new perspective. If you talk to the same people, well, they're going to say the same things.
That's true.
Once you go to people in different professions or different backgrounds, different ages, you start to see the world in a different way.
Well, I think you can attend different forums. Maybe you're interested in social media, so you can go to a forum on that someplace. And you can read a lot of different things about different subjects. I like to read some of the tech news every day, but it's not what I do in my job. So you have to expose yourself to other things that are not part of your regular job.
Right. And just for listeners, the opposite of outer circle is inner circle.
Mm.
And usually they're made up of your friends or confidants. And I like what you said, Doris, because in the last sentence it says, in today's digital age, the outer circle is almost infinite. And I think that's so true with the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can look up on so many different places about different topics so that you become more familiar with things that are not part of your inner circle.
So these are some skills you have. The fourth one's a little bit hard to figure out about improving the mix of what you do. Can you tell us more about improving the mix, Amanda?
Okay, it says, which means knowing what to add or subtract from your job and also checking for fit. I think here it just means, you know, what is your goal or your job description and other things that you're doing in your job fitting that? Or do you need to, you know, take some things away or add to it? So that's what it means by taking and adding away and checking for fit. Does it fit what you're trying to do or even your personality? Those kinds of things.
It's a little bit more complicated, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, it is.
Do you think so, Peter?
Yeah, I don't think... Well,
puzzling that
if I get a tip that says, well, just figure out what to take away or add,
right.
I think these are good tips, but you need to live a whole life. Yeah, this is kind of a long lifetime of learning and keep trying. And it comes back to just don't be defeated by your job.
Anyway, that's what they put in the book.
Yeah.
And they had the fifth one. What about the fifth one?
So the last one that we talk about is delivering the difference. So you have to continue to work almost obsessively until people love your outcome.
Don't give up on your ideas, right?
Right. That's right. Keep trying and keep trying new ways until it works. And it's going to take hard work to do.
Don't give up. Right. Right. Well, I think those are good tips. Actually, if I put down three, I would just put down three things that would be very good to do great work. And one of them is to be faithful and loyal to your job, because if you do that, it'll make a big difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And my second one I would put down is to think about others instead of yourself, mm-hmm. which has to do with being optimistic and thinking about others, how it affects them, how you can help them. And the third one is to be optimistic. Those are my three simple ones, but you can all put your own down. But have some ways that you can make a difference. Life is too important just to say, what do I want to do? How do I want to please myself? You want to live a life with a purpose and leave behind footprints that others can follow.
Right. I agree. And also taking the opportunities to make a difference.
Yeah, and I think what I really like that I come away with is these people were never defeated. I think all of our jobs can be discouraging or challenging at times, but they decided not to be discouraged, but to have renewed hope to make a difference.
Keep on and have hope, right?
That's right.
Okay, well, great job of teaching, great work, and we hope that this optimism will brush off on everybody. And if you keep on with Advanced, you'll find all kinds of subjects. Don't forget to check the QR codes. It saves you opening your computer. You can just do it on your cell phone, right? Good. And thanks for being with us, Amanda and Peter.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all for the next lesson next time. Bye now.
Goodbye.